Vermont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. Physical distancing works. Wearing a mask works. Limiting gatherings work. New York is reopened to a new normal. For many, it means the coronavirus is over. Or, not much to worry about. The national dogma is, the stock market is up, so new COVID-19 cases are merely embers of a dying flame. Go figure. The genius in the White House and his like-minded supporters are measuring the temperature of hot water with a yardstick. Foolish. Let's hope New Yorkers don't fall prey to the Washington nightmare and revert to a meism that puts others at risk. New York's reopening is not an invitation to recklessness. As of July 14th, Nassau County remains among the hardest hit counties in New York State. Let's not gloss over the deadly consequences revealed by the numbers. Black and brown and otherwise marginalized communities continue to bear the medical and economic brunt of COVID-19, the disease that spreads the coronavirus. Who is he? A recent Google search says he's worth $11.4 billion. In 2018, he sold his 49% share of the Brooklyn Nets for $2.3 billion. A 2019 Celebrity Net Worth report notes, quote, his $11 billion net worth is enough to make him the 9th richest person in Russia and the 70th richest person in the world. In 2011, he challenged then Prime Minister Vladimir Putin for the Russian presidency. Many believe his candidacy was backed by the Kremlin in an effort to bolster the legitimacy of Putin's victory. So who is he? And should we know more about Russia's playboy billionaire, Mikhail Prokhorov? On June 16, 2020, a Bloomberg headline read, billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov to shutter Long Island's Nassau Coliseum. Yes, that means close the newly renovated stadium. Renovations that took 20 months to complete at a cost of $165 million, according to an April 2017 Daily News report. Then on February 29, 2020, Governor Cuomo, flanked by John Ledecky, Scott Malkin, Jeff Wilpon, Gary Bettman, and an array of legacy Islander players announced the state taxpayer-funded upgrades demanded by the National Hockey League to Nassau Coliseum. The upgrades sealed the deal to bring the Islanders back to Nassau Coliseum for the 2020-2021 season. All this aided and abetted by Nassau County Executive Laura Curran, who sports her very own Islander cheerleader paraphernalia in the People's County Executive Office. Through it all, Barclays Stadium in Brooklyn, the Nets, the New York Mets, the Islanders, and the Nassau Coliseum runs Russia's billionaire playboy Prokhorov and other big money donors to Governor Cuomo. So what happened between February 29th and June 16th? The lazy answer is COVID-19 happened. But there's more. On Exum, Prokhorov's company has told potential investors that it would turn over the lease for Nassau Coliseum in return for assuming roughly $100 million in loans and EB-5 visas. The firm, which is laying off arena employees, could also surrender the lease to its lenders, a source told Bloomberg News. Well, COVID-19 was a perfect excuse for an Exum. Though they cite coronavirus as a catalyst for closing, It has been reported that Annexum had defaulted on lease payments to Nassau County before COVID-19 and before Governor Cuomo announced the taxpayer-funded $6 million upgrades to the stadium. What does this mean for the Islander project at Belmont Park? That's anyone's guess. But if past is prologue, it's safe to say that Elmont taxpayers are looking at another big promise, no return, fool's errand. New York taxpayers continue to involuntarily shell out their hard-earned wages as the investor class of millionaires and billionaires vacuum up profits on failed stadium projects across the country and across New York. Today's podcast, part one of our two-part conversation, examines, among other things, how one local media outlet distorts, minimizes, and drifts in the wind and rhetoric of failed public-private partnerships. Partnerships championed by wealthy investors like Russian oligarch Prokhorov and people like Ledecky, Malkin, Wilpon, and their handsomely paid and paid for government actors. We'll be right back with the conversation. You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. So we have on the phone today Ms. Tammy Williams. Ms. Tammy Williams, this is her second time on the Elmont Online Podcast. And we're going to be discussing a new development around stadiums and how they actually affect or not affect.
Hi, Aubrey.
There you go, Tammy. So we in Elmont woke up on June 16th to an article in Bloomberg News regarding Long Island's Nassau Coliseum. This Coliseum, which has been in some financial stress after having done, I think, a $200 million renovation to make it acceptable to the NHL. It's my understanding from this article now. The stadium is essentially closed until further notice. And one of the things that I want to talk about today is this idea that how these stadiums are reported to the communities that they're in, and how they seem to be no particular central thesis around whether stadiums are good or bad for communities like Elmont, whether stadiums are sustainable economic engines in communities like Elmont, in communities anywhere. So we want to talk a little bit about Nassau Coliseum, because I believe Nassau Coliseum is an exemplar for stadiums all across this country that local governments seem to find pleasure in putting into communities like Elmont. So Tammy Williams, like I said in the last podcast, I can't think of anybody else that would be more knowledgeable on this issue than you.
Well, I would like to start by saying Happy Father's Day.
Why, thank you.
you don't stop. You go 7 days a week. So we appreciate your civic engagement and bringing this conversation about sports arenas, the facilities, and how it impacts communities, especially communities of color, because studies have shown that that's where the market, or that's where these arenas are centrally located. And it's not that the communities were built around it, is the communities were thriving, and then all of a sudden this building or infrastructure comes to start this whole conversation of, oh, this is going to be an economic boon, you know.
Yes.
And it's like, boon for who?
That's the question.
I don't own it, so. You know, if you don't own something, you don't truly benefit from it. So that's where, I guess, again, we started with this whole movement of understanding how this impacts our community socially, economically, and Nassau Coliseum, which is the white elephant 15 miles down the road, which isn't really that far or less. How does that impact the community of Uniondale? Are they benefiting from having Nassau Coliseum there? Is the county benefiting from having Nassau Coliseum there? And the school districts, are they receiving some type of tax incentives or stimulation into the property taxes by having something like that there?
So before you move on, let me just I want to, you know, that's a very important point you're making about how this affects public education, and generally, well, in particular with Nassau Coliseum and with Belmont Park. Most importantly for us with Belmont Park, there is this idea of a pilot, which is a payment in lieu of taxes, that is very controversial and in fact problematic for the community, since it deals with revenues to local municipalities, including school districts, that haven't yet, really we don't even know at this point what that is going to look like in the future. So please proceed.
Yeah, so that is all what you're stating is everything we put on the record. And what I mean by record is during this environmental impact study, those questions of economics were raised, and we were basically told in writing, which is documented, people can look for this, that economics is not part of the environmental impact study. So how do you call it Chapter 7, Social Economic Impact, and the word economics is in there, and that's not a factor? I'm confused because the word is right there.
Well, so am I.
So we said, well, we have an arena down the road. What's the issue? Oh, it doesn't have the 3,000 seats needed to reach NHL standards. They pulled back some seating so that people can walk around the Coliseum more freely, open, socialize, mingle without having to sit so much on top of each other. So then I said, well, get folding chairs. Or you know, when you have concerts, you alter the appearance to suit the act.
Correct.
Whether that's the circus, Beyonce, Maxwell, you know, what's his name? That old Billy Joe.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
You suit it to their expectations. So put the seats down. Oh, they don't have enough luxury boxes. What is the luxury box? And then we started doing some research. Those are tax incentives, business credits. When you are able to rent out the suites, you know, people who are well endowed, rich folks, get to write it off on their taxes as a business expense.
Exactly.
That money for those suites, whether it's 100 suites or 60 suites, can go for $3,000 and up. That's money in that developer or that owner's pocket.
Correct.
It's not going directly into, you know, the average person who purchases a ticket or lives in the community.
Right. That definitely isn't making it in a wholesome way to the taxpayers of that community.
Yeah. So they sell you the idea that we're doing this for the fans, we're doing this for the spirit of sports, we're doing this for XYZ. No, you're doing this for dollars.
Exactly.
Because the luxury boxes trumped the regular seats that people were accustomed to. The in-your-face sporting activity, hit the glass as your player is playing.
Right.
That's intimacy. You spreading everything apart, you don't get that intimate atmosphere.
Right. As a fan, you're not really as involved in the game as you would normally be if you're in one, you know, if you're not in one of those box seats.
Exactly. So this discussion about arenas and sports facilities and stadiums and communities, and how does that benefit the local economy? Well, it actually is a drain on a local economy because we showed 30 years worth of data that they normally don't fulfill the promises to the community the way that they put it out in the beginning. It's
Right.
usually that gold-plated carrot. I'm going to give you this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You know, always going. And then when everything is all said and done, and they get what they want, you're left standing there like, but what happened to all the promises?
That were
And
made.
those were made. Oh, we'll get there one day. I mean, look downtown Brooklyn. They're still waiting for the affordable housing.
Exactly.
And that was from 2006.
And that's 2006. Now, Tammy, we actually have a student from Elmont who went to Spelman. And that student did a study of the new stadium in downtown Atlanta.
Every 10 years, the census comes along, and it seems like everyone I know always asks the same two questions. What is the census, and why does it even matter? Let me give it to you straight. The census counts every single person living in America. An accurate count of our community tells us where there are more people, and where there are more people, there are more needs. Our participation could impact how public funding flows to our schools, health clinics, senior care, job training, and housing. It even determines our congressional representation. I don't know about you, but it sure sounds like the census matters to me. This year, take a little time for the 2020 census. You can complete it online, by phone, or by mail, and make sure you count everybody you live with. Your mama, daddy, sweetheart, babies, roommates, everyone. This chance only comes every 10 years, so let's step up and be counted.
Shape your future. Start here. Learn more at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
Yeah, this was a student who, you know, we honored through Black History Month years ago.
Absolutely.
Who was very much engaged and interested in community and economic empowerment. And then at Spelman, this project came up of interviewing community members that were about to embark on this new, I forget, one of the ladies in the film says it the best, like the spaceship or something.
Uh-huh.
Towering over their communities. And one gentleman mentioned, they said they were going to come and fix my kitchen. I'm still waiting on my kitchen to be renovated. I'm like, oh, really? Didn't they say they were going to come and put windows on our first floor? Like, these are homeowners.
You read my mind. You read my mind. In fact, we have a meeting at which community residents were still waiting for the double pane windows that were promised to them by in New York Arena Partners. Amazing. Kitchens
Yeah.
kitchens in Atlanta, windows in Elmont.
Exactly. Exactly. You're gonna get windows but you're only gonna get windows on certain sides of the project because you know, that's the place where they feel it's gonna be more
Yeah,
your
more
property will be more affected.
yes, more directly in the construction noise, as they would call it.
Oh, and one air conditioner per household, as if you don't have a two level or three level home.
Yes. I forgot about that. The single air conditioner that would essentially help to keep your windows closed because the noise would be so untenable that you would need to keep the windows closed, and so they would give you a single air conditioner.
Whatever blows into the air.
Yes, exactly. So so hold on 1 second, because we can have this conversation for months. I know we can, because you know we're that immersed in it. One of the things that is of interest to me is how local press, we don't have to name them, but we can, how local press seem to, I'd like to use it, sort of blow in the wind. So for instance, we have a local paper and a local television here that I don't think that there is a project that relates to stadiums that they have not been in favor of. And then when the project fails, they tend to, well, say, oh, well, we were wrong, but now this new thing is here, and listen to our voices on this new thing. So I would want to talk a little bit about how you see these things being sold to the community by the local press, and in particular by local press that may have an interest in pushing a particular narrative on the community, often a narrative that is inconsistent with the community's wishes.
Local media is or media in general is supposed to be non-biased or have some type of journalistic ethics.
Right, objectivity.
Reporting. Yeah, thank you. When a local paper prints a story 2 years ago that talks about this issue of arenas and how you need to have an anchor tenant that is going to, you know, assume the debt and fill the seats on top of whatever entertainment.
Right.
And then turn around and say, okay, this is not a viable option because you don't have 2,000 seats and we need to go up the road. We raise those issues. Hey, how can we make this work for everyone without harming the greater good? And the greater good to me are the taxpayers.
Correct.
Who will have to absorb the cost. You know,
yes.
Or why is it that we have to learn about this through Bloomberg newspaper or Forbes newspaper about all of the social economic impacts of arenas and stadiums and how they're a drain to the coffers of state and locality budgets or town budgets, stuff like that.
Right.
You have a whole hidden agenda. And that's what this local paper showed us, is that they spoke out of three sides of their mouths.
Mm.
You know, two sides, and I'm not going to say the other way that they spoke. But I will have discussions about why you said one thing a few years ago, turn around and say something now, and then in the future it changes. It's either you're staying on message because you're not going along with evidence-based research.
Right.
You know, either you're a tabloid or you're a credible source. Your stance and your message either remains the same or it raises questions of ethics.
It does.
If Bloomberg or Forbes didn't talk about this or have this discussion, would you have raised it? You have to go and verify Bloomberg's story. Bloomberg is not going to print something that they have no knowledge about.
Right.
Or I wouldn't say inside information, or would not check their facts. They have a television station, for God's sake. Bloomberg is not just a tabloid paper.
And let me interject something here. And also, there is no significant merging of what is opinion and what is news in the Bloomberg paper. You can go to the editorial pages of Bloomberg and you can find editorials. You can go to the news section of Bloomberg and you will find news which is objective and so forth. One of the sinister things that I saw in the local press was this merging of the editorial aspect of reporting with the factual, fact-based, ethics-driven reporting that's supposed to be done. So basically, mm-hmm. I guess what I'm getting at is the fact that people would read the local paper and something that is presented as news, to those of us that understood it, recognize that this is not news. This is an editorial piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the things that bothered me about what we saw in the Elmont community as it related to not just one stadium, not just two stadiums, but two stadiums and a casino.
Mm-hmm.
All of these editorialized notions were merged into news articles, things that masqueraded as news articles. And now they keep changing. There is no, I like to call it true north. the people that report on these issues doesn't appear to have what I would consider to be a true north.
And it's the Samson story with the splitting of the two babies, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not that many people on Long Island in comparison to the people in New York City. So when you look at the distance between all these arenas, you're just like, well, if Beyonce is playing at Belmont, she's not going to play at Nassau because they're going to look at the ratio of people.
Right.
Sometimes we may go to Prudential Center, take the train in.
Into New Jersey.
Into New Jersey, get into the Prudential, get back on the train and go back home. Same thing with Madison Square Garden. So we're not really participating in the local economy when we're just rushing from one place to get to our concert and then going back home. Same thing with this. When we asked about the, you know, train station and everything like that, the train station is not for the community. It's for the arena goers, because you have someone come with their little golden shovel, take a picture and stand and say, you never have to leave this park and go out into the community. So what part of this is for community benefit am I missing here? When you tell your people that they never have to go out into the community, everything will be here for them.
And you know, Tammy, we should really expand on that a little bit, because this is what happens to arenas all across the country. And of course, we're talking about an arena in Elmont. And we're talking about several arenas on Long Island, and in particular in Nassau County. The modern arena is a self-contained entity.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you need, from ticketing to parking to snacks and foods, everything you need is built into that entity. So tell me a little bit about how you see these arenas actually helping small businesses in the communities that they're dropped into.
To be honest with you, I don't see people leaving the arena to go to the local establishments like bars and restaurants after they paid all that money to get into the facility, because in order to leave the premises, you have to have a re-entry.
Right.
So you're not going to jump in your car and then drive down the block to one of the local businesses and participate in that local economy. So I asked that question during the environmental impact, and I got hit. This is the response, and I'm going to find the response. I asked, how is this going to impact local businesses, you know, property owners, etc.? And the response that I received on paper, black and white, stated that that would take too long of a study.
Ah.
They don't got time for it right now.
Absolutely.
It's totally different from, I have to say, the Barclay Center, because the Barclay Center is on a street corner.
Right.
So you have hustle and bustle all around. There are a lot of businesses that are still, that were shuttered out, displaced, couldn't afford the rent and property taxes over there. So it is a lot of buildings that are still staying for lease.
Right.
So it hurts sometimes when you have these huge development comes in communities that just can't support it. But this particular property is behind a gate, behind iron fencing.
Correct.
The only time it's open and you're walking around is during the Belmont Stakes, which was yesterday, and we weren't able to participate because of, you know, social distancing.
Correct.
But you have people walking up and down in the community looking for local shops to participate and hang out in between these little, races and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was our argument. How about you invest around what we already have there? Because we have an open air arena. It's called the racetrack.
Exactly.
Why are you trying to suck everything in to one little space, and then nobody's going to leave that space to go out into the community?
And the evidence of that is quite clear. We have, Yankee Stadium in the Bronx.
Oh, yes.
Where the spillover economic development that was supposed to occur hasn't. We have Mets Stadium in Queens, where the spillover effect of having all of these small businesses. And when I talk small businesses, I'm not talking about that fraudulent small business idea. You know, the idea that you can have 500 employees and be construed as a small business for the federal and state government. No, we're talking about those mom and pop stores where you're employing, you know, mommy and daddy and the children come to work there after school and things like that. That's what we're talking about when we talk about small businesses, because very often small business, the term small business has been redefined and has been redefined in a way that benefits big business. So that, you know, for instance, with this whole PPP thing, I'm not asking you to be familiar with this, but I'll just make a statement here. With regard to PPP, we learned that businesses that you and I might consider big business got that money. But they got that money under the guise of being a small business, simply because of some technical definition by that was championed by, for instance, the United States Chamber of Commerce. You know, so we are not talking of, when we talk small businesses, we're not even talking about the McDonald's down the road or the Wendy's down the road, because those are parts of franchises. We're talking about those that person that invested all of their money as a family and put together a small business, and they're employing a few people in the community. Those are the small businesses we're talking about. So we've done that. So let's come back now to something that we started earlier, and that is this idea that stadiums in general, stadiums broadly speaking, have this, I'm going to say, a deleterious effect on small, not urban communities, because they like to talk about it in that fashion, but suburban communities. Do stadiums actually benefit small suburban communities like Elmont? You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
That's an excellent question. And according to a article, I just wanted to quote, hold on one second.
Go right ahead.
Quote, economists and other experts say a suburban arena without an anchor tenant would have trouble surviving, end quote.
There. So the stadium itself would have trouble surviving, and they haven't even addressed the issue of taxpayers.
There you go.
So we know, we don't need, and in fact, the newspaper that you've quoted, I will state it. I'm assuming that is an article that was written maybe 2 or 3 years ago by Newsday on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. What's that newspaper's position today on?
Oh, they support the Newsday editorial board, supports the project at Belmont because they feel it's going to be an economic boom and that two arenas down the road can, you know, survive each other. And then later on, another reporter says, well, can they really?
Yes.
And now we see, as of this week, one is Nassau Coliseum is going to indefinitely shutter.
Mm-hmm.
Until they find someone else to invest, because, I mean, billionaires are not there to lose money. They're there to make money. So where was this billionaire owner's conversation with the community that, hey, by the way, I'm not paying rent. Y'all gonna have to find a new investor. And I'm sorry, goodbye. No conversation. So when you look at your local and small businesses, you know that it's shop owner because you probably live in the same community or your kids go to the same school.
Schools.
It's a sense of real community. But you have these billionaires and millionaires. Nothing wrong with people being rich.
Nothing at all.
You. Nothing wrong. Do something right with your money. Who are not locally invested. The conversation should have happened between the local stakeholders, the government, before it hit a newspaper.
The Elmont Online Podcast is brought to you by www.elmont.org, where residents go for cutting-edge commentary, real-time news feeds, and more. Elmont.org, building a stronger community since 1999. Thank you for listening. Between now and the next time we meet, be safe. I'm Aubrey Phillips.